Hi, this is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicles, and I want to welcome you to another episode of Stories of the Supernatural. Wherever you find us, whether it's a video on YouTube or on your favorite podcast platform, please like and subscribe to us so that you can get notification of when a new show is released. You can also find us on major social media platforms where I give you a heads up about upcoming shows and which date and time they will be aired. If you go to MiamiGhostChronicles.com, you can find links to the shows, MP3 files which you can download, or links to your favorite platform like iTunes, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and all other major sources. You can find information for upcoming and past talk show appearances as well as new book projects at MarlenePardo.com. You can also purchase books and merchandise there. And you can visit my author page on Amazon at Marlene Pardo Pelliser. Due to popular demand, I'm narrating my True Believer stories that I've collected throughout the years in a new series called Supernatural Storytime. You can find links at supernaturalstorytime.com. If you are into classic horror, ghosts, and adventure stories, I narrate some of those at Nightshade Diary. And you can find links at nightshadediary.com. If you would like to read noteworthy news about the paranormal world, true crime, conspiracy stories, and anything that is just plain weird, you can visit the Stranger Than Fiction Stories tab at MiamiGhostChronicles.com. I do want to thank you all for being part of my audience, and I think you are all wonderful.
Hi, everybody. This is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicles Stories of the Supernatural. How's everybody doing today? Good, I hope. Better than me. As you can... I don't know if you can tell, but I'm kind of congested. As a matter of fact, I was talking to our guest tonight, and I was saying I thought it was going to be an allergy attack, which usually for me is like within 24 hours, I'm over it. Nope, it was not an allergy attack. Or it morphed into a head cold, and I'm getting better. But yeah, I went through that total energy drain kind of deal. You know, just like, don't look at me. You know, my dog's camped out under the bed because I was not getting up for anything. So I feel better, but I'm still like, yeah, I'm still like, it does a number on you. And I hadn't been sick really like this for a long, long time. And, but anyway, let's get to the really interesting stuff, which is who I have as a guest. And if I wouldn't have stopped, we would have been talking. It'd be midnight. It'd be like, wait, we got to start the show. It's great to talk to her. I got Debbie Chestnut back, ladies and gentlemen. And let me give you a quick about Debbie. She's been a paranormal investigator for over 20 years. She's the author of several books, both fiction and nonfiction. Her nonfiction are about her experience as a psychic and a ghost hunter, and her fiction includes the Savannah Williams series. Now, the good thing about Debbie is, like, and you all know, she's been around the block once, twice, three times like me. As a matter of fact, right now, before we started rolling, we were talking about, yeah, remember when you had to take pictures before digital, when you actually paid to develop your pictures? Not everybody remembers that or admits to it anyway. So how are you doing today, Debbie?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm really thrilled to have you back.
I'm glad to be back.
And another thing that we were talking about, and, you know, we could discuss anything and everything because God knows, you know, with your own experiences and so forth. We were talking about the new slew of paranormal shows that have come out in the last couple of months. And we were weighing in about what we like, what we didn't like, including that Jason is back with
Ghost Nation.
Ghost Nation, and
Ghost Nation. It's a good show,
right? And I haven't had a chance to see it because it makes you wonder why didn't they team up, or was it somebody that said, "Hey, you guys need to go your separate ways"? And I don't know, you know.
No, it was done because when they were reviving Ghost Hunters, the station, the producers wanted to bring in a whole new team.
Okay.
And Jason said he wasn't going to abandon his friends Tango and Steve.
That's nice.
So that's why they're still friends. They're all still friends.
Right.
That's just why they did two separate shows on two different networks.
Right, right. And you know what? Because everybody, believe it or not, thinks of when they were together and they had this huge team. And, you know, it's and people don't realize even these shows have their budget as far as they're always conscientious about those things. And the one that we both agreed on that we both like is the Hans Holzer, the Holzer Files.
Those are, that's such a good show.
I really like that one. I really. And I am going to admit that I have a fondness for Hans Holzer because I remember those were my first ghost books that I read once upon a time. In the library, Hans Holzer books, which I still have some now, you know, I were the really the only books about ghosts and ghost stories and like a ghost hunter going with a medium, like Sybil Leek and Ethel Myers to all these haunted places. So I
They were trailblazers.
Yes, yes.
For the rest of us, you know, and you know, for the time, Holzer did some great work. I'm glad to see they're going back and revisiting some of the cases with everything that we have available now.
Right.
And their medium is very good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. She's great. But you know what I really like? Because, you know, I've read all the books, but to actually hear some of the tapes, you know, the recordings that he did.
That's so interesting. I wish they would, like, play more of them.
Or, to me, I'd be like...
You know, or release them on a DVD series or something.
Yes. Yes, because it puts a whole different spin on it as far as, and again, let me tell you something. He really had quite a following as far as even different celebrities that wanted to be there because he went to some really back then, you know, he concentrated mostly in the Northeast, like New York, New Jersey, all those areas. And he had a lot of people that wanted to accompany him just to be present when he would be doing some of these investigations.
Yeah, they were very interesting. And I like how a lot of the shows are going back and really researching the history of these properties.
Yes, yes. And I think that they're realizing that sometimes you get a lot of urban myths, and that's understandable. And some of them, you know, it's like I'm into the research. And I like it when they do the research and they say, you know what, there's nothing to that story, or it was, you know, it started out as this and it morphed into something else, which happens, or even
that
better.
On one of the Ghost Nation episodes.
Yes, that they, it becomes something else.
The family was told that a woman and her son died a particular way, and it turns out they didn't die that way at all.
Right. And then the truth comes. And let me tell you something, people sometimes say, oh, well, the research, you know, and I go... Research, sometimes you find more disturbing stuff out than what the original story says.
You know, case in point, where I live, you know, I'm on Lake St. Clair, and it's pretty, you know, it's pretty big. And there's a subdivision, it's on the water, and, you know, canals run behind all the houses. And they actually had a neighborhood meeting and had my partner and I come, and there are so many houses in there experiencing paranormal activity. And, you know, I did had it. First thing you do, you have to research.
Yes.
You know, and I'd researched the sub before I went out. I was ready for them. And I'm like, well, here's the deal. Your subdivision is built on what used to be a Native American village.
Oh,
and you have a school 2 miles away that is built over a Native American burial ground. And you used to have a farmer that's not there anymore, thank goodness, but when he farmed his land and he plowed up Native American skulls, he put them on the fence post to scare the children, and you're wondering why you have paranormal activity, really.
Really? My God. That's a problem.
Yeah. It's a problem, you know, and...
Yes. And you know what? And it's like you said, most people aren't, you know, everybody that comes in there, they're new to the area, or nobody remembers, or the people that knew died, unless they do what you did, which is the research part.
Well, you know, and it's so cliche to say, you know, oh, well, it's a Native American burial ground, but I'm sorry, I'm in Michigan. They're everywhere.
Right. Yes.
You know, especially where I am in Michigan, they were, you know, we're on the big water, and, you know, there were 3 reservations, and I mean, it's just, it is what it is.
Well, you know, and over here in Florida, you know, the big lake that we have here, which is Lake Okeechobee, mm-hmm. around the turn of the century, you know, when the fishing, like catfish and, you know, people with the nets, they took off, like that industry took off.
Yeah.
I read several newspaper accounts where these fishermen were bringing up skulls. And later on, they realized that these were from the indigenous people that predated even Europeans coming here. And apparently for them, the water, the lake was like a doorway, a portal to the next world. And this is why they would put their dead in the water. And I think
here they buried by the water. They actually, the area I'm in, it was considered almost a neutral zone.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of different tribes would come in and they'd hunt and they'd fish. And once a year, all these tribes made a pilgrimage to this particular area. And one of the archaeologists had said that it was like they came here to bury their dead.
Right. Exactly. There's
And these go back, you know, 5,000-6,000 years.
Yes.
Some of them. You know, just very, very old.
Right. Well, in some cases, there's some of them that hundreds of years they were basically using those areas to bury their dead. It wasn't like, you know, what we think of as in modern times, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, and then, you know, it's full. And no, sometimes they're being used for quite a long time.
Plus, you know, one of the tribes, the Potawatomi, they were mound builders.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yes.
Because there's so much...
Yeah, so you have layer upon layer upon layer upon layer.
Yes. I mean, there's so much controversy sometimes going on with the mound builders, as far as even if they were even influenced by natives like the Aztec and the Mayans from Central America, you know, that came up and made their way up into through the Mississippi up into the northern United States, and you know, there was some type of trade or influence between the two groups?
And it's entirely possible. I mean, you know, they're finding out more and more that, you know, the Vikings were here.
Mm-hmm.
The Knights Templar.
Yes.
After they were supposed to have been annihilated.
Well.
You know, they were here. You know, there's just a lot that we still don't know, I think.
Right. No, I think that they're realizing that the discovery of America, they keep having to put that date further, earlier and earlier and earlier.
And then, you know, there was the bridge that once connected, you know, Alaska to Russia.
Yes.
You know, so people and animals and everything probably came over through the ice bridge.
Yes. Yeah, people don't realize that there were land bridges. That there were land bridges before that, you know, you don't see anymore.
Now, as a ghost hunter, depending on what area you hunt in, mm-hmm. I mean, you can have layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of history.
Yes. And sometimes, and that's, as a matter of fact, and I've mentioned it before, when you were saying about the Native American, down in Texas back in the 80s, they had that case that was called the Black Hope. And this was, I don't know if you heard of it, Debbie, it's a little town in Texas, and apparently a developer sold some lots of land where you could, like, have him build your house for you, and he built, like, 8 houses, and all these people, they started having some unusual stuff, but what really kicked it off was when one of them was going to have a pool put into the backyard. And from what I understand, when he was about to, you know, get ready to excavate, a really old man comes along and says, hey, you know that you're going to dig up a couple of bodies when you do that. And the owner of the house was like, what? He goes, yeah, because, and I should know because I was the one that helped bury them. And they were like, I don't know if it was an older man, if they believed it or not. Make a long story short, sure enough, when they excavated, they brought up two wooden coffins, to make a long story short. Turns out that once upon a time, this land, just so happens, was part of an African-American cemetery. But what happened was, originally, it was the New Hope, like a small town, and they had this cemetery. And they had used it for about 30 years, like after the Civil War into the 1930s. But then there was a fire that kind of like wrecked the town and everybody moved away. Everybody forgot that there had been a cemetery there and had never been registered. It was not an official cemetery. How's that? It was never registered in county records.
It's kind of like a poltergeist.
Right. And it wasn't, in a sense, it wasn't anything spooky. It was just that it had been used as a cemetery. But once the town, the little community dispersed, everybody left. And of course, the markers that were had been done. As a matter of fact, one of the homeowners had noticed that there was some strange markings on a big oak that they had in their yard. But they never understood what it was. And it was because, of course, this community was poor. They didn't have the money for like granite headstones. And, you know, wood disintegrates.
Right.
And once they dug that up, that, and then things started going wild as far as hauntings in all the houses, the 8 houses. And it got to the point, that, as a matter of fact, they made a movie about it. It came out, like, I want to say, late 80s, 90s. Because they had built there and on a place that, as a matter of fact, the homeowners even tried to sue the developer, but the developer turned out they didn't even know themselves because, again, the records that weren't filed through the county or whatever didn't say, hey, this used to have people buried there. So, yeah, right. They had some very, very serious hauntings, including that one of the families, the main one that wrote the book and that the movie was based on, their 30-year-old daughter died. And they blamed it on what was going on there. And eventually the 8 families that purchased there moved away. And then they did, I want to say a couple of years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, they did a follow-up piece on it where, because of course they resold these houses back. And nothing as significant had happened, but all the families that were living there kind of were having some weird stuff still going on. So, and if you think that this doesn't happen, there's a lot of unofficial graveyards. Like you said, like the poltergeist kind of scenario plays out more often than people think.
It's hard to know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times, you know, due to expansion, they move the stones and don't move the bodies.
I tell everybody, the people that make those decisions are usually businessmen that are not sentimental about it. And they just move a few of them and then they're like, hey, you know what? Just move the headstones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they don't believe in the paranormal or believe these things can happen. And, you know, history has shown us.
Well, you know what? And now that you mentioned the poltergeist movie, you know, you remember that, you know, they came out with like, what, 3 movies about that. And It leads you to believe that the beginning, it was because they hadn't moved the bodies, right? And, you know, you think, okay, the developer was greedy. They knew that they were building houses on a cemetery. But then it turns out later on that supposedly what was causing the haunting was because of those people that had died in that cave, you know, that they had that doomsday scenario, that was the real origin. And the point I'm making is that sometimes a lot of weird stuff happens on pieces of land, similar along those lines, that people never know about, never makes the paper. And it's part of the fabric of what happens there and affects anything and everybody that occupies it.
Everything like that is going to leave an imprint.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, on the ground. The energy's got to go somewhere.
Right. And and even then, even when you try to do the research, you know, you can only research up to a certain point, basically what's been documented.
But you can only research what's out there.
Exactly. And if there's nothing, nobody ever documented it, because either one, there were no witnesses, or on purpose it was kept secret. Guess what? Sometimes, and you know, sometimes people, you never do get the answers as to who or what is out there causing the trouble.
Right. You just have to work with what you have. You know, which is kind of what we do a lot.
Well, and I remember when we talked the last time that you had, you know, sometimes we have things like, you know, when you hear about these places that have a history of tragedy, either the location or the family, if they've, you know, if it's one of these. And then it's when you start going back, you find out that, you know what they say, what came first, the chicken or the egg? That maybe there was something originally there, which is what triggered all these tragedies or these things that the hauntings are blamed on, which sometimes leads back to a non-human entity or right. something going on there, which...
Right. I mean, you never know. I mean, you know, like the Hathaway Mansion before it was torn down, you know, the entities that were there would not acknowledge the 3,000 square foot addition.
Wow.
So that tells you that they were there before the addition was put on.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the era the house was built in and the era that this family lived there, you know, parlor games were seances, Ouija boards.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those were parlor games.
Yeah.
So... Lord only knows what they brought upon themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, sheer dumb luck, or perhaps maybe knowing, you know, maybe they got into it more than just a game. But yeah, you're right. There was a time that was like, oh, a dinner party, and then, you know, we're going to do table tipping or stuff like that.
Or we're going to have a seance, or we're going to do cards, or we're going to, you know, play with a talking board.
Yes. People don't understand, especially after the Civil War and things like that, and after World War One, where people also had lost loved ones. That was a spirit communication was a big deal.
And this was about the time. I mean, that house was completed in between 1855 and 1857.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the Civil War started.
Yes. Yes.
And. You know, that where that house was, it was, I'm not saying it was part of the Underground Railroad, but mm-hmm. it was on the route.
Right.
Because of how there's nothing to indicate it ever was part of the Underground Railroad. But, you know, there's another house less than a mile away from it that has the possibility it was.
Exactly.
Because of the proximity of the water in Canada.
Yeah. And that was,
you know,
the
just,
ultimate
it was just
destination.
Across the river, just across the lake.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the ultimate destination. It was like, you're right. That was like the jumping off point.
Yeah. You know, so there's just layers and layers of history. You have to look at all of it.
And,
as much as you can find.
And, you know, and I don't know if you've run across this, Debbie, you know, especially, you know, when you work as a psychic, people don't realize that sometimes hauntings is not a haunting of an entity. But if, let's say, let's use that scenario that you're talking about. Let's, the Underground Railroad, where you get people that maybe are housed in dreadful fear, like, you know, anguish. Maybe they got separated or they had to leave somebody behind or they don't know, am I going to make it? And I think that after a while, those feelings impregnate
a
place.
They get imprinted. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, look at the basements of some of these old houses that I've been in around here. They're fieldstone. You know, they have just absorbed all that energy.
No, let me tell you something. I don't know what it is about basements and cellars and places like that, that God, they just like...
They creep everybody out.
Oh,
basements
yeah.
and attics.
The dark hauntings. And I've even heard, especially the ones, you know, that... They had the wells, like, underneath the house, you know, instead
yeah.
of out in the yard. That's another one that, man, I've heard some really
yeah.
dark stuff around.
I mean, the Hathaway house had two wells. They were both within 6 feet of the house.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, one was in 3 feet of where the demonic net chose the nest.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and even the demonic would not acknowledge the addition to the house.
And how did you come, was it because it wouldn't go in there, or how did you realize that it was not?
Because that was the only place you could go to get away from it.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. As a matter of fact, one time I did an investigation, and there's an area up north of Miami-Dade County. It's called Port St. Lucie.
Back in the 30s,
40s, and 50s, a lot of people to come out here in the wintertime, it was like a lot of fishing camps were out there. And there was the clients, they had a house right on the, you know, like the river and the inlets.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big fishing camp out there. And part of the house dated back to that time period. And then, like you said, an addition had been built. Everything that took place always took place in the old part of the house, never in the new addition.
Right, and it tells you that they didn't acknowledge it, which kind of helps.
Yeah.
It gives you a time frame.
Yes, yes.
You know, at least you could narrow down a period of time. Like, you know, it was before the addition. It was, you know,
yes,
it was there before the addition was put on. If you know when the addition was put on, you know, at least it gives you a starting point.
Right, and it was really weird because the addition, they ended up putting bedrooms in there, and then the other side had, you know, when they do the split level where they had a bedroom and the rest of the house and one of those things. And like the dad or the father, whatever, he would be in his side, his bedroom was okay. But if he ever fell asleep on the sofa in the living room, he would have, you know, it was one of those where, and that's how they kind of figured out that it was only the original part of the house where they experienced things. Nightmares, everything. That's when, you know, we started. And there was, a later on, like you said, when you do the research, there was a lot of violence that took place. And people, you know, back then, this was like the middle of nowhere. You could basically do away with somebody and dump the body. I mean, this wasn't, you know, it was not that well populated unless it was the winter time when a lot of people would come down for fishing. So yeah, there was a lot of underhanded stuff taking place. So yeah, things like that.
Yeah.
People don't realize how often, and you know what? And I tell them, you know what? There's a lot of people that did awful things and they take these secrets to the grave with them. They never talk about them. They never brag about them. They don't have death. You know how everybody talks about those deathbed confessions where people like,
yeah, they don't do that very often.
There's a lot of people that have, they're not going to confess to nothing. They go to the grave with that happily. They don't like that thing about like,
you know, I get ghosts that won't go because they don't want to be judged.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You know, I mean, James Hathaway was in that house 150 years.
Wow.
And he wouldn't leave because he was not one of the nicest people during his life.
Yes.
And he was afraid he was going to be judged. He wouldn't go.
Well, people don't realize that when you're being, and I'm going to put it bluntly, if you're a son of a bitch, you might still recognize you're a son of a bitch. It's not like you're oblivious to it. You know?
Right.
And then you die, and you're like, man, I did some really bad stuff. And then they fall into what you talk about, which is, and you know what? This is not the best place, but I'm just going to hang out here because I don't want to find out what's waiting for me on the other side.
Right.
Yes. And even the people, the most callous people, I want to say in a little bit in olden times, like the religious beliefs that maybe they never paid attention to while they were alive, all of a sudden, they remember them in the afterlife. Like you said, that fear of what's the judgment.
Yeah, depending on their belief system. You know, I mean, yeah, he would not go. Even his daughter, who had passed away before him, she came in and out of that house periodically, and she couldn't get him to go. And I said, well, his own daughter can't get him to go. I don't get a chance.
Yeah. Did he have a good relationship with that daughter?
She died. I'm not sure what the relationship was. She died 3 months after getting married.
Wow.
At the age of 20.
Okay.
And everyone thinks she died in the house. She didn't. She died on the winter part of the state. And She died after an illness of only a week, which seems a little suspicious. And she died on a Thursday, funeral was on Sunday. She was kept in, it was winter, so she was kept in a mausoleum in another cemetery until the ground thawed enough for them to bury her out here. And the inscription on the big obelisk in the cemetery, you know, has Mabel Hathaway Dunham, wife of Orrin Dunham, yet it's rumored that James had Lily of the Valley planted inside her grave, because her grave is shaped like a bed with a headstone, with a headboard and a footboard and sides. And he, Lily of the Valley, planted in there, but still allegedly grows today, because he thought she was poisoned. So I don't know what to believe, because why would you put the name of the man you think poisoned your daughter on a tombstone?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's just one of the many urban legends that surround that family anyway.
I know, and sometimes, I want to say that back then, especially during Victorian times, some of the customs that they had, we look at them now, we're like, huh? Especially when it came to the dearly departed. Like,
right, I mean, she was buried, you know, Victorian times, she was buried, everyone says a glass coffin, but it wasn't all glass, it was wood, and just like from like mid-chest up would have been a pane of glass.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't a total glass coffin, it couldn't withstand the weight of the dirt.
Right, because I know that they had those iron ones that, mm-hmm. that were the glass, and those are about the only ones that really held up as far as, and also kept the body intact because they were airtight. But not most people could afford those. You had to be pretty well off.
They were very wealthy. I mean, back in the day, she died in 1881.
Mm-hmm.
Among his papers in the probate court was a receipt for her headstone, and back then it was $925.
That's
for the date currency, that's in the thousands.
Yeah, yes.
You know, they were a very wealthy family, but
yeah, people don't realize that even back, you know, when you, and I tell everybody, you know, when you go to these cemeteries, you immediately know what it's the old areas as far as the Victorian, because of mm-hmm. all the monuments and the obelisks and the, you know, the angels and the mausoleums, and because
the mausoleums, oh my gosh, there's a cemetery just when you get into Detroit off Woodward, they have some of the most beautiful mausoleums I've ever seen. That family buried there.
Mm-hmm.
Their mausoleum looks like an Egyptian tomb with the big lions, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Think of the money.
And it costs, by the way, you know, even when you, like, dollar for dollar, even back then, it was a very expensive thing, but, and I tell everybody, because, you know, people don't realize that even when you were dead, you wanted your family well thought of. In other words, your name,
it's status.
It was a status, and I say, you know what? That's why where, you know, they would have a pauper's grave in the corner, and or if you had led some type of like, you know, unusual or questionable lifestyle, they sometimes wouldn't even want you buried, you know, inside the cemetery, or they would put you way in the corner in the weeds.
Well, there's a little cemetery by us, and some of the older stones, they're very creative. Like, there's a man who owned a bakery, and his headstone's in, like, it's kind of tall. It's not big, but it's, you know, stands up. And it's in the shape of a slice of bread. There's another one that has a piece that's a big square stone, and it has two columns that's dark in between the columns, and on the top is raw ore. He was a miner.
Wow.
So it looks like you go down to a shaft. So they're pretty inventive. It was pretty, it's kind of cool when you walk through them to walk through these old cemeteries too.
Oh, yeah. Especially compared to nowadays, now that everything is kind of flat and, very pragmatic. It's like, okay, name dates and
Yeah.
that's it.
I like the old ones.
Yeah,
I like
but
they're neat.
if you had to reproduce them, they cost quite a lot of money. But like I'm saying, there the relationship that back then that people had with death and the dearly part, and I don't know if it's because people died younger, more people died easily. How's that? A lot of diseases and stuff. So there was just a different, I guess, a different approach to death as far as.
And I think there was a different attitude toward their ancestors.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Other than, today we still get it in some ways. Our parents, our grandparents, people we knew, but when it comes to other people, maybe not as much,
Yeah.
And now you just really. I don't know. I still pay attention to it, but.
Yeah, but like I said, you go into a cemetery, and depending how big it is or where it's at, you immediately know which is the older part just because of the
Oh, yeah.
monuments right
Oh,
away.
yeah.
Right away.
It's really easy.
Yeah, and that,
It's really,
that's.
I like the older parts anyway, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes I stroll around, I'm looking at this stuff, and it's like. And you understand also, that they would use sometimes some, especially these, the bigger cities, they would use these cemeteries as like parks where people would stroll around. Some people
Oh,
think
they used
now,
to
oh,
have
that's so
lunch in them.
morbid. And it's like,
They
yeah.
used to have picnics in them some days,
Yeah. Yeah.
and have picnics in the by the headstones, and it was an event.
Yeah. It was like a park. It was a park.
Yeah, the park.
Yeah, but
You know.
we're the ones that put a different spin on it now. So Debbie, how about investigations? Anything interesting happening or any projects that you're working on?
I have that that subdivision. It's just making me crazy, actually.
What's happening?
And in a couple days, the second edition of Is Your House Haunted will be out on
Okay.
Amazon. It really hasn't changed much. The Kindle edition's out now,
Okay.
and the paperback should be available in a couple of days.
Okay.
I just kind of launched it today.
Okay.
So it's Your House Haunted, the second edition. Nothing really changed in there. I just did a couple minor little tweaks to it.
Okay.
But it should be out, and I'm working on a couple mysteries, and
Yes. Let me tell you, writing's hard work, huh? People don't realize.
Yeah, write a book, they said. It'll be fun, they said.
And then the truth.
Yeah, and there's days when you bang your head against the wall because it feels so good when you stop.
Yes.
And, there's days when it just flows. I mean, my routine is, I get up, I do some stuff, I go to breakfast at the same place every morning, sit in the same booth with my laptop. They know me, they bring me coffee, they leave me alone, they let me write. If other customers are too loud, she shushes them.
Yeah, you're a private bououncer.
Yeah, she's so cute. And, half the time she'll come by and I'm writing and she's like, what do you want to eat? And I just deer in the headlights completely. And she's like, never mind, I'll just make you something. So she just makes me breakfast. It's awesome.
That is so funny.
I think I wrote, gosh, 90% of my last two books
Isn't that great?
in
No.
that restaurant. I put out Haunted Ink Bay with Arcadia Publishing. That's out.
What
And
was
it's
that
all
title again?
Haunted Anchor Bay, Michigan.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember that one.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's all about the ghost stories in my area and a lot of the history.
Okay.
Because that's where it all originates from anyway. I've been doing a lot of presentations, and it's my busy season.
Let me tell you, there's a lot of haunted stories up there in your area, like the Great Lakes area and all that. They've got a lot
There
of
is
like.
Redken, rich in hauntings, rich in folklore, urban legends. I just read an article today. It's this little town that back in the 1800s, over 100 children disappeared, 100 people disappeared, mostly children.
Really?
And they're blaming it on a Bigfoot. And I think he's still in the area. Like, it's been 100 years. Get over it. Move on.
That's unusual.
I mean, not that there couldn't be a Bigfoot up there. Believe me, I spent a lot of time up north. And those woods up there are so thick in parts that you cannot see a foot into them.
Let me tell you that your state is also known for a lot of dogman sightings.
Oh, the dogman, yeah. It started out as a joke.
Yeah.
From some radio station. And he didn't know that, yeah, actually, I've been dogman. There's a dogman. There hasn't been any too many recently. But given the woods and the thickness of them, it wouldn't surprise me if there was some cryptid and stuff here. I mean, we just verified by prayer cam the fifth verified sighting of the cougar. It's the cougar.
Well, you know what? I tell everybody, you know what? Bigfoot I can handle, but those dogman stories, I listen to them. I don't think I'd be too thrilled with one of those encounters somehow. It's just
I find cryptids so interesting.
Oh, I do too, but there's something about...
I'm just not sure I'm going to go hunting for one.
Well, that's what I was getting to. It's like, you know, I was like, yeah, well, I saw Bigfoot. Like, I think I'd wig out, but I could handle that. The one is like that I don't even want to find out about to me would be, is Dogman real? It's like, yeah, forget it. You know.
I don't know. I mean, the Mothman's pretty menacing.
You know, I always think of the Mothman almost, though, also almost like a harbinger of disaster.
I don't know. Did you hear about those Mothman sightings in Chicago?
Yes, I heard that. I heard that.
Like 17 or 18 of them.
Yeah, and then you think about it, you know, right now there's so much, you know, murders and bloodshed and God going on in the streets of Chicago. And I want to say my son went into the Navy, and you know there's a big training center like 40 miles north of Chicago.
Yeah, I know. My son was there at Great Lakes.
Okay, at Great Lakes. Well, my son was there in 05. That's where he did his basic, and I went there. And, of course, I went to Chicago. And it just so happened that, well, this was, what, man, I want to say, 14 years, man, time flies. But, yeah, but, I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't bad then.
No, I remember we went through, you know, I went through his graduation. And then, you know, we came back to the city and we basically did the tourist thing. We walked around. It was beautiful.
That's what we did, too. Brad was there in 99.
Yeah, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
It was great. We had a great time, you know?
Us too. We had a fantastic time.
You know, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, personally, I mean, as much as I would like to go looking for some cryptids, but with a really big group of, like, really big guys.
Yeah, just in case.
This is something I'd venture out look for on my own, per se. I mean, personally, I'd rather face down a ghost.
Right.
Or even a demon before I want to face down one of those things.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know, but they fascinate me. I'm getting more and more into cryptids lately.
Well, you know what? And then, at least for me, inevitably then my mind starts going into, you know, you hear all these stories about all these people that have gone missing and all these rural areas or national parks, you know, places like what you're describing.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, okay, well, you know, what if Bigfoot's not really friendly after all? You know, you just start doing that.
Well, I have never assumed that he is.
No, I know, but you know that. But there's always, you know, that there's always that controversy where people will say, "Well, he's not," and then there's people saying, "No, he is." You know, and it's like, do you really want to find out who's?
Remember that show, These Woods Are Haunted?
Yes.
And all the Bigfoot things they did on this, I'm like, yeah, no. You know, it's like, note to self, stay in the house. You do not want to camp, you know?
Let me tell you, there was one I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember which show it was. And it was some men. They went to this really remote location on a lake in Canada. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was one of those cabins. And all of them, by the way, they were either scientists or researchers, and they were out there to collect. And this place was like, I think it was one of these places that you could only even get there like in the summer, you know, one of those really remote, middle of nowhere places. And these guys started experiencing stuff being thrown. I mean, really, really unusual things happening to them in the middle of nowhere. And I was like, I mean, let's face it, who's going to be out there like screwing with you?
Yeah, you know, and my thing is, they can't hear you scream.
Yeah. Yes, like...
no one can hear you scream.
Or, I mean, by the time, you know, you're going to call for help. Like, if, you know, you raise somebody on the radio, good luck, we'll be there day after tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, because you have no cell service, trust me.
Yeah.
And now there's...
you're on your own, in other words.
You're on your own, you know? So, yeah...
But like I said, the one I'm on the fence about, like all things, because I think, you know, you have the people that are like, no, Bigfoot is just a misunderstood.
Yeah.
But the dogman thing, I've heard some stories and it's like, God dang, I'm thinking to myself, a lot of these people that say they've had these sightings are people that are outdoorsmen or hunters. In other words, it's like they're used to being outdoors where they're not going to mistake this thing for something else. You know, it's not like me. God knows what I would think. Yeah. And I'm thinking that some of them are really, really rattled. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, mistakes happen, you know, or people see something and it's not what they think it is, whatever. But some of the sources, it's like, again, we come back to, I don't know, as far as I'm concerned, everybody, I have yet to hear one person describe a dog man encounter, a sighting, on a positive note. How's that?
No, they're definitely not a creature you want to run into. You know, I think one of the best movies, and some people are probably going to disagree with me, which is fine. I think one of the best movies that was done on Mothman was the Mothman Prophecies.
Yes, I know. I know that they hammed it up a lot,
movie.
But that was a very good movie because I think, because I went down there. I went to the, people don't, and when you go out there, you realize this is really, really like a little town.
You know, it is. This is just a small little town.
Yeah.
The Mothman Festival was a couple of weeks ago.
I went out there, it was, nothing was happening, which was, and it was, sometimes it's great, you know, it's, nothing's happening, because so I was able to stroll around and, you know, the bridge, you know, that was there, and then, you know, I saw the statue, but when you get there, you realize this really, really is a little town. There was like, in other words, you know how some, and then of course we're always thinking of reality TV, for us. But back then, there was nothing along those lines happening. On the contrary,
right.
This would have been the most far-fetched idea for anybody to come up with.
Well, truth is, stranger than fiction a lot. You know, that town was just unbelievable.
Yes, and
it was very cool. I mean, not the bridge collapsing, but I mean, the man is just very fascinating in himself.
Well, and then again, which is why I was telling you, is like, you know, because when, if let's say you go by the movie, it makes you think, was this thing warning them? Did it bring it about? Is it a harbinger? In other words, like, if you see this, it's like your fate. In other words, you can't change it.
When it started.
I know, you're right.
He's like, don't be talking about me.
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Mothman, shut up, girls. Like, no more, you know, you're going to let my secret on. Let me tell you something. I've talked about what I call paranormal sabotage before. People think, oh, it's like, no. I mean,
it's a real thing.
There is. I know. It's not like getting paranoid or anything. I know stuff can go bad with electronics, but yeah, I've had first-hand experience with that kind of stuff. So anyway, we shall not talk about He Shall Not Be Named. Moving on. Yeah, I finally had to end the conversation with Debbie because I ran out of tricks. I couldn't figure out what was going on. That's the world of podcasting. That's the world of technology. That's the world of communication. Before we started rolling, we were talking, everything fine. And then it went slowly downhill. I experimented on the phone, on Skype. I can see, you know, what my bandwidth usage is and even my CPU usage on my computer. None of that's draining. It wasn't, Alfie, it might have been, I don't know, maybe she's, I don't know. But would it be the first and last? That's what we were kidding about. Like, we were talking about Mothman and it went all downhill after we started talking about Mothman. You know what? That's funny, but yeah, that's weird. You know, that we were talking about how sightings in Chicago and what is Mothman. I would have loved to talk to her, not only about, because she was, you know, and I don't know how much she captured of it, that she's busy now for Halloween because she's doing presentations, so on and so forth, and that she's got second edition of her book. I believe it's If Your House is Haunted. That's about to come out. And, you know, I guess originally we were talking about all the new shows that came out. I was telling her I heard that A Haunting has been stopped. But that might come back. That was a long-running show. I haven't caught up with all the shows. Like I said, Holster Files, me and Debbie were talking. We really like it. Like I said, and that has a special place in my heart because I was reading the books about Hans Holster and a lot of his cases way back. I want to say that was my intro to ghosts, was his books. And I... especially fascinating is listening to some of the audio, the recordings that he did back then. And he had, I want to say it was like three mediums that he worked with a lot, or at least the ones that was like Ethel Myers, Sybil Leek. And I want to say it was Eileen Garrett. I think it's the other one. And I'm positive. Well, everybody's passed on by now. You know, him and all these... you know, this was way, way out there. I mean, because people don't realize that back then he carried it off. And like I said, that there was a lot of celebrities that sometimes wanted to participate in it. And I think that's why, but he was really doing a lot of stuff that now is mainstream, but back then was like, huh? And he had some very interesting contacts. Like I said, I like that show. I haven't seen the new one, Ghost Nation. I got to catch up and see it. The one that I've caught a couple of times is the last ones that Zach Bagans has done with the serial killers and things like that. I saw a couple of that looks interesting. One of the ones that me and Debbie that we were like not happy about, we were like, God, the ghost bait. Man, that one where they're putting a sack over somebody's head. It was like, what are you doing? Why are you torturing these poor people? I mean, to us, and we were talking about this before, it was like, okay, unless you really get off on watching people terrorized, why are you doing this? Where's the paranormal investigation in this? What? Sitting somebody that really had a really bad experience, whether it was paranormal or not, these people thought they were. Leaving them by themselves, putting a potato sack over their head, and then watching them basically wig out. Where's the research in that? I mean, no, that was the one I think I saw a couple of things, and it was like, oh, that's very disappointing. You know, it was like, you know, I mean, there was, as my opinion, there was a lot of ways to go with that. But I mean, yeah, a couple of times I saw some of these people were like really, really afraid. They were terrorized. It was like, I don't, there's no entertainment for me whatsoever in seeing somebody tortured, not physically, mentally, or emotionally. That to me, that, I don't know. Somebody didn't have their, I don't know. But anyway, let's get on to, I hope you guys, I do have a lot of it. And I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry for my voice. I'm sorry for the way I sound with this allergy that morphed into a head cold. But I do have a lot of interesting guests. I am going to take a month off, well, like 45 days, because between the times of Thanksgiving up to right after the new year, I stop interviewing people, because for my own, how can I say it, my own things that are going on, plus my guests, everybody, you're with family, you're Christmas shopping, you're running around. This is the season to be jolly, tra la 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 la. Yeah. So I take about 6 weeks downtime, but I mean, shows are still going to be coming on, which I pre-recorded. But again, you've got suggestions. If you are an upcoming author, if you're a paranormal investigator, okay, you don't have to be well known. I would love to interview you. Please contact me at Marlene@MiamiGhostChronicles.com. I will bring you on. I'd love to hear either regular paranormal investigators, even if your group is one person, or if you just are one of these people that have had weird stuff happen to you, I'll interview you, please. I mean, if that's one thing I am not a snob about the paranormal. And I think it's, I think, like I said, because of, as a matter of fact, me and Debbie were commenting that sometimes these shows tend to go back with different groups, depending, to the same places over and over again. That after a while, it's like, okay, this is done, really done. I think that when you get the person or persons who are telling their firsthand experiences, and again, I, we were talking about this again, and I've mentioned it before, you know, I come from a time of ghost investigating before all the gadgets. What I call the dungeon. This was dungeon ghost hunting. This was dungeon. This was basically where you relied on maybe recordings, photography, which you had to pay to develop. If you had a sensitive, and like I said, in even the human body. After a while, when you do this, you would pick up on certain things, which is, whether it's your physical body that you would pick up on atmospheric changes, or because you had developed some type of sensitivity, you would feel certain things, the advent of things, which when you do this, after a while, most metaphysical manifestations do give off a warning. You feel it. You feel it. Besides the typical, you know, oh, there's a cold spot. Sometimes it's a cold spot. Sometimes you'll have the heat. Temperature shifts sometimes. Sometimes there's the feeling of a vacuum, like silence. Like all of a sudden you get this, like noises stop. Sometimes you'll have that. I've had the experience of ionization, which is that, you know, that smell that you get like right before a thunderstorm comes through. I've had that experience. Sometimes you actually physically see something in the air. There's my experience, a lot of metaphysical things, they announce themselves before they materialize. And back then, this is the hardcore, and I consider myself a hardcore investigator. This is what you worked with, because this is what you had. And because it was so subjective, you'd had to try harder to divide between not letting your imagination run away with you and discerning what was really there. or not what you wish was there, or because you were scared, or because, hey, you know, that cold spot was really a draft. You know, sometimes that happens. Sometimes drafts come in through places that you don't realize that it's coming through. But yeah, they, again, coming back to my original point, I'm not a snob about paranormal investigations. So if there's anybody out there that wants to tell a story from any perspective, contact me. Or if you have a story, does it? And sometimes, again, I tell people, you know, I'm into research, but you know, sometimes people have experiences that they never figure out. Why me, or why here, or who, or what was it, or what became of it? You know, people sometimes live years in certain places and they move away, and they never get an answer. They have suspicions, but they never get an answer as to who or what was doing the haunting, or why it stopped, or why it starts up. Doesn't matter. Because that is part of the supernatural. Not everything is tied up with a little bow at the end, as far as explanations. Because sometimes, God, there's so many things that could be causing it or having it end. All right? Let me give you an example. What if you have a haunting that's taking place because of somebody that lived there? Long time, temporarily, certain circumstances caused this person to get confused and stay behind. And somewhere along the line, that person's family started praying for them and maybe even having masses for them. Let's say we're going down the Catholic or Christian avenue. And just that one moment happens where this spirit has clarity. It's actually able to cross over. And then the people that were living with all these happenings, all of a sudden stuff stops and they're like, huh? What happened? Where'd it go? And it's because sometimes things are happening outside of what you have knowledge of that brought clarity to whatever or the reason why. And I've even heard of where you'll have a haunting and the significant other, I'm going to say, let's say like a husband and wife, and when that other spouse finally passes on, it's almost like they come and they get the spirit of that person that was left behind. And then that spirit departs. And sometimes it's after many, many years that they've been haunting or stuck or being seen or felt. But let's say a family that maybe might have moved into that house that where they once lived. And they never are aware that what happened was that that person's spouse has finally passed on and came for them. And they recognize them. And that they cross them over, they take them with them. And they'll say, yeah, we lived in this house and for 10 years. We had all this weird stuff going on. And or we were seeing this lady or this man. Then one day it just stopped. We can't figure it out. That happens. Things like that do happen. So anyway, and by the way, guys, I did, my first nonfiction is out, which is called Walker Between the Worlds, book one of the Sibyl Chronicles. It's going to be the first of a series. It's an urban fantasy supernatural thriller type. I think you guys are really going to like it. By the end of November, I'm going to be putting out a novella in that universe. I'm going to be following up as a series. So by all means, go to MarlenePardo.com, or you can check out the book on Amazon. I have a Kindle and a paperback version. Every once in a while, I do put it up for free on Kindle. You know, I'll run it for free on a few days. So if you want to follow me, also, you can either sign up for my newsletter that you can find at MiamiGhostChronicles.com, on MarlenePardo.com. You know, I put on there links as far as any new projects, books, podcasts, giveaways, As a matter of fact, I just finished a giveaway for a Green Lantern apron. Every once in a while, I'll, you know, sometimes I give away paperback books that I've written. Other times, I'll give funky stuff like that away, like a, you know, a Green Lantern superhero apron. Sign up for the newsletter or follow me on Facebook or on Twitter. And I usually post, like I said, links to everything that's going on, or if I have a giveaway or I have a new book, or if I'm, you know, putting an e-Kindle version of any of the books for free for a few days. And I really think that I've gotten so far a lot of positive feedback from the readers of The Walker Between the Worlds. A lot of, like I said, if you're into urban fantasy, supernatural thrillers, you're going to like it. You're really going to like it. I'm using all my, like I said, knowledge of the paranormal, but putting it in a fictional universe, which I think is pretty interesting. So again, guys, thank you for being part of my audience. I apologize for the audio that went south on us. I wish it was something that I could have done to fix it, but unfortunately I couldn't. But don't forget, send me your stories, or if you're an author or anybody, again, I would love to interview you. Get a hold of me and we'll set something up. Take care and happy Halloween.